Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. All right, what is up, guys? Welcome back to the show. I'm sorry about our lengthy hiatus there. I haven't had an episode since about this time last week. I guess it was Thursday. I've been really, really busy. And honestly, my production rate is probably going to be pretty low all the way until around my birthday, which means nothing to you guys, which is about 2 weeks away. I've got a lot to finish up with the bathroom remodel here, and basically I've got some contractors coming in to do a lot of work just after we hit my birthday, and so that weekend on the I think it's the 8th or the 9th and the 10th maybe, I think the 9th and the 10th is the weekend, that'll be the last weekend that I do that stuff, and then I will be back to focusing on job and this, because honestly all the stuff on the house has been really it's just been keeping me occupied with stuff that I don't want to spend my life doing, and this is what I want to do in my free time. I want to be able to set up nodes, I want to be able to test out all this software, I want to be able to do a podcast episode and all that good stuff. So I'm trying to get done with my part of this, and then we're going to hand this over to a contractor and pay them $1.5 billion to just finish what's left. No, it shouldn't be too bad, actually. I've gotten a lot of this house done, and then I will be back in action, hopefully, and pumping out a lot more content for you guys. Still probably only two episodes ish a week, maybe three, kind of depending on things, but I'll have a whole lot more time to work on the other things that are going on in the background, like the channel management video that I have been slowly chipping away at with the Casa node. I mean, I released that like 2 months ago and I still don't have a second video on it. Actually still collecting some good information, because that's a difficult one to tackle, honestly. Channel management is not super straightforward, and you might need you really need terminal access, so to do it really good. So the Casa node makes it a little bit, there's that barrier between plugging it in and actually booting up the Docker and the LND instance so that you can have full command line control, and it also voids your warranty, so be careful if you are messing around with that. If you did not know, it voids your warranty on your Casa. I have already done that multiple times, so my warranty is done. I've been trying to experiment with it, and hopefully one of these days I'll have a video out. But like I said, for the next 2 weeks, I'm going to be pretty much consumed with getting the rest of this remodel done, getting as much as I can do myself. But without further ado, I don't want to go too far. We have hit formalizing and securing relationships in our own public networks, and we've talked about automata as authority, like as the contracts, like the software itself as the authority, like taxi meters and cash register readouts. Like that kind of thing, like those are where we eliminate the human element in errors, or like we use the mechanism itself as a as the authority in the agreement, and then there's also talking about like smart contracts, and give an example of a vending machine is the ultimate like simple like real world smart contract. Just to let you know, this one is really long if you haven't actually gone and checked it out. So there's no way we're going to be able to finish this today either. This will likely be three parts. I didn't quite realize how long it was. I thought I had gotten through more of it on the previous reading, but we're going to be jumping right now into part two of formalizing and securing digital or relationships in public networks. So we are starting off from dimensions of contract design. I need another coffee. All right. This one's a good coffee. I got my French vanilla. Almond milk edition. That's a good coffee. All right, I'm ready. Let's do this. Let's jump in. I know I tricked you there for just a second, but we're hitting it at dimensions of contract design. Economists stress two properties important to good contract design: observability by principals and verifiability by third parties, such as auditors and adjudicators. From the traditions behind contract law and the objectives of data security, we derive a third objective: privity. We flesh out the dimensions of contract design by disentangling mental from computational transaction costs, classifying the kinds of enforceability, characterizing the temporal phases of contracting, and discussing the nature of trade-offs between the three design objectives. Mental and computational transaction costs. The costs that smart contracts address are lumped by economists under the catch-all rubric of transaction costs. We can divide these into mental and computational transaction costs. One major category of costs include the cost of anticipating, agreeing to, and clearly writing down the various eventualities. These are largely mental transaction costs, although online research tools, for example, may bring more information about eventualities. Most contractual disputes involve an unforeseen or unspecified eventuality. We lack a good model for this. Such a model would account for the computational costs of foreseeing these eventualities, some of which may be uncomputable and therefore of infinite cost. Where eventualities remain unspecified, contracts remain incomplete. Where counterparties lack focal points, they lack a meeting of minds. Negotiation addresses this gap. The farther apart the focal points in terms of value, the more expensive the negotiations. There are a variety of institutions of negotiation, which economists study under the rubric of, quote, mechanisms. These range from simple haggling to sophisticated auctions and exchanges. Contracting phases. For the temporal phases of contracting, we use the following schema, classified according to the two-phase model used in economics. Ex ante, search, negotiation, and commitment. Ex post, performance and adjudication. Smart contracts often involve trusted third parties, exemplified by an intermediary, who's involved in the performance, and an adjudicator, who is invoked to resolve disputes arising out of performance, or lack thereof. Intermediaries can operate during search, negotiation, commitment, and/or performance. Hidden knowledge, or adverse selection, occurs ex ante. Hidden actions, moral hazards, occur ex post. Here are some examples of contemporary electronic commerce activities and the phases of contracting that they deal with. EDI, or Electronic Data Interchange. We discussed in the previous section, which is computer-to-computer negotiation, like business transactions. EDI deals with the phases of contract of commitment and performance. Then you have contract drafting, which is dealing with the negotiations phase. Web surfing, which is dealing with the search phase. Payment, an example of performance. Online exchange, participating in the search, negotiation, and commitment. The I agree button, dealing with commitment. This article covers all phases with a particular emphasis on performance. Observability, hidden knowledge, and hidden actions. The first objective of smart contract design is observability, the ability of the principals to observe each other's performance of the contract, or to prove their performance to other principals. The field of accounting is, roughly speaking, primarily concerned with making contracts that an organization is involved in more observable. Economists discuss hidden knowledge, also known as adverse selection, which can occur due to lack of ability to observe potential counterparties during the search and negotiation phases. Another major problem is hidden actions, also known as moral hazard, which can occur due to the lack of observability and ability to drop out of contract during the performance phase of a contract. One important task of smart contracts that has been largely overlooked by traditional EDI is critical to the meeting of the minds that's at the heart of a contract, communicating the semantics of the protocols to the parties involved. There's ample opportunity in smart contracts for smart fine print actions taken by the software hidden from a party to the transaction. Here's a small example of smart fine print. If X equals true, print F X is false. Without user interfaces, smart contracts are largely invisible, like the electronics in newer car engines. This is both a blessing, counterparties don't have to feel like they're dealing with user-hostile computers, and a curse, the smart fine print problem of hidden actions. To properly communicate transaction semantics, we need good visual metaphors for the elements of the contract. These would hide the details of the protocol without surrendering control over the knowledge and execution of contract terms. For example, encryption can be shown by putting the document in an envelope and a digital signature by affixing a seal onto the document or envelope. Online enforceability. Let's take a quick break right here, hit our sponsor, and we will jump back in at online enforceability. Amid all the hype about, quote, information warfare, lost in the noise is the fact that it is impossible to commit an act of physical violence over the net. That includes not only all physical crimes of coercion, but also arrest, incarceration, and other traditional methods of law enforcement. Because of this fact and the jurisdictional swamp that is the multinational internet, this article concentrates on means of protecting against breach and third parties that do not rely on law enforcement. We can categorize the security measures against breach, eavesdropping, and interference in the following manner. Proactive measures. Breaching actions are rendered impossible, or either side can drop out with minimal loss upon counterparty breach. Reactive. Examples of deterrence. Reputation and physical enforcement, third parties like tort law. Then there's damage recovery. Secured transactions. Again, reputation and physical enforcement, principals in contract law and third parties, tort law. Currently, the most prevalent forms of security software are not proactive cryptography, but reactive and panoptic methods like virus scanning software, filtering firewalls, trace routes of attackers, etc. Once modern cryptographic protocols are more widely deployed, the balance will likely shift towards preventative security. Verifiability by adjudicators. Reactive measures rely upon two areas, verifiability and penalties. As discussed in the section on accounting controls, under ideal economic conditions, the statistical distribution of verification failures is known, so that verification costs and penalties can be traded off neatly. But with imperfect information, the jurisdictional swamp, and lack of collateral or other security, collection of damage awards is even more severely limited than in contracts confined to traditional geographic jurisdictions. Reputation costs may be the only practical source of penalties in many cases. For reactive measures to work, high verifiability is critical. So our second objective is verifiability, the ability of a principal to prove to an adjudicator that a contract has been performed or breached, or the ability of the adjudicator to find this out by other means. The disciplines of auditing and investigation roughly correspond with verification of contract performance. Privity, protection from third parties. Our third objective of smart contract design is privity, the principle that knowledge and control over the contents and performance of a contract should be distributed among parties only as much as necessary for the performance of that contract. This is a generalization of the common law principle of contract privity, which states that third parties, other than the designated adjudicators and intermediaries, should have no say in the enforcement of a contract. To maintain knowledge and control, performance must be encapsulated, protected from outside influences, especially sophisticated attacks. This is the idea behind both the legal doctrine of privity, which restricts redress to the parties to a contract, and the idea of property rights. Attacks against privity are epitomized by third parties, Eve the eavesdropper, a passive observer of contents or performance, and malicious mallet, who actively interferes with performance or steals service. Under this model, privacy and confidentiality, or protecting the value of information about a contract, its parties, and its performance from Eve, is subsumed under privity, as are property rights. The most common definitions of security in the online world roughly correspond to the goal of privity. Our generalized privity thus encompasses property rights as stable objects linked to particular contracts, and thereby the parties in privity to such contracts, the owners. Privity creates a clear boundary within which operate a coherent set of rights, responsibilities, and the knowledge with which to carry out those responsibilities and protect those rights. Clarified boundaries also allow accountability. Protection from extraneous interference allows us to focus responsibility for the consequences of contract-related activity onto the parties to the contract. Trading off contract design objectives. Privity says that we want to minimize vulnerability to third parties. Verifiability and observability often require that we invoke them. An intermediary must be trusted with some of the contents and/or performance of the contract. An adjudicator must be trusted with some of the contents and some of the history of performance, and to resolve disputes and invoke penalties fairly. In smart contract design, we want to get the most out of intermediaries and adjudicators while minimizing exposure to them. One common outcome is that confidentiality is violated only in case of dispute. Many kinds of specific performance are often entrusted to intermediaries. We must be able to trust the intermediary, credit agency, antivirus software vendor, certificate intermediary, digital cash mint, etc., with their particular claims about creditworthiness, dangerous byte patterns, identity, conservation of the money supply, etc. As Ronald Reagan remarked in a slightly different context, trust but verify. To deserve our trust, intermediaries must convince us that their claims are true. We need to be able to, quote, ping their veracity, verifying that certain claimed transactions, in fact, occurred. An entire profession exists in market economies to perform this function, auditing. Ideally, observability and verifiability can also include the ability to differentiate between intentional violations of the contract and good faith errors, but this is difficult in practice since the difference is often largely one of subjective, unrevealed intent. Building blocks of smart contract protocols. Protocols. A protocol in computer science is a sequence of messages between at least two computers. At a higher level of abstraction, a protocol consists of algorithms communicating via messages. These programs act as proxies or agents for human users who communicate their preferences via user interfaces. We distinguish protocol endpoints by names, such as Alice and Bob, but it should be kept in mind that the endpoints are really computer processing units, which may or may not be under the control of or taking actions contrary to the intent of the human user. Human users typically do not have full knowledge of the protocol in question, but rather a metaphorical understanding obtained via user interface, manuals, and so on. Unlike most real-world contracts, protocols must be unambiguous and complete. Protocols come in three basic types. I've modified the terminology of Schneier to match more closely to the corresponding business terminology. Self-enforcing, and it's just a back and forth between Alice and Bob. Mediated, Alice communicates with an intermediary, and Bob communicates with the intermediary. Adjudicated, Alice and Bob communicate with each other, and then any evidence is sent to an adjudicator. The corresponding smart contracts elaborate on Alice to distinguish between the software in two components, the endpoint of protocol and the user interface, and Alice herself. Cryptographic and other computer security mechanisms give us a kit of tools and parts from which we can build protocols, which form the basis of smart contracts. The physics of cyberspace. The security properties of physical media are based on physical properties that we often take for granted. For example, the unforgeability of an atom of gold. The structural constraints, or physics, of cyberspace relevant to security are described by the mathematical theories studied by computer scientists, especially in the specialty called cryptography. Here are the important fundamental particles of the cryptographic universe. Pseudo-random function families, like secret key encryption, hashes, MAC, etc. Trapdoor one-way functions, public key encryption. Pseudo-random bit generators, like generate keys, padding, cookies. Information theoretic or unconditional. An example, one-time pads. These particles are potent building blocks for engineering secure protocols. Imagine a material so tough, it is completely impervious to a supernova, and so cheap, you could use it to make walls, locks, safes, and envelopes to protect everyday items. This is not just a metaphor. Cracking a 4,096-bit RSA key with best known algorithm really would require more electrical power for the computers than the power produced by a supernova. These cryptographic primitives promise to be a main driving force of the fourth cost revolution for global business. Cryptographic protocols. A family of protocols called cryptographic protocols because their first application was computerized secret writing provide many of the basic building blocks that implement the improved trade-offs between observability, verifiability, privity, and enforceability in smart contracts. Contrary to the common wisdom, obscurity is often critical to security. Cryptographic protocols are built around foci of obscurity called keys. A key's immense unknown randomness allows the rest of the system to be simple and public. The obscurity of a large random number, so vast that a lucky guess is astronomically unlikely, is the foundation upon which cryptographic protocols and smart contracts based on them are built. Two significant cautions are in order when thinking about how cryptographic protocols can be used in online relationships. The first is that protocols usually provide security up to some assumption. This assumption is a remaining weak point which a complete working system must address in some reasonable manner. One common endpoint is assumptions about trusted third parties. Often the degree or function of the trust is not well specified, and it is up to the real-world systems analysts to characterize and ameliorate these exposures. The best mediated protocols only trust the intermediary or counterparty with a well-limited function. Even without trusted third parties, cryptographic protocols often ground out in trust of the counterparty. For example, encryption of a message provides confidentiality up to the actions of parties with decrypting keys. Encryption does not stop key holders from posting plain text to Usenet. We cannot just say that encryption provides confidentiality and leave our concern for confidentiality at that. The second caution is that much of the terminology used in the cryptographic literature to name protocols, signatures, cache, etc., is misleading. Sometimes the terminology falls short on substantial matters. A digital signature, for example, is not biometric and is based on a key that can easily be copied if not protected by another mechanism. Often, cryptographic protocols can be generalized to much wider purposes than implied by the label. For example, digital cache is a very general protocol which can implement a wide variety of bearer certificates and conservation wrappers for distributed objects. Attacks against smart contracts. All right, guys, I am out of time again, so we're just going to stop right here, and we'll jump back in on the next episode. We're a little bit over halfway through, so I'm going to try to make sure that I knock out enough time to really get to the end of this. But this is where we start to see, it's just fascinating that this was written, that Szabo wrote this in 1997, because there's so many keys here that, or so many, like, elements here that, like, we're finally, like, are finally coming to fruition. Like there's a great example of, I talked about in smart contract design, to get the most out of any intermediaries or adjudicators, we should be able to minimize our exposure to them. And so, like, you have a situation where only, like, the only outcome where information is revealed to those parties, like an intermediary or an adjudicator in a dispute, is in the case of dispute. And a great example of a smart contract that does that is the Lightning Network smart contract. You don't reveal any information to the blockchain or to the underlying network, which that's our adjudicator in this case. The Bitcoin network is our judge, which is even more amazing because we've managed to replace the contract adjudicator with replace the third party, a trusted third party for adjudication, with a distributed, basically financial court, which is the Bitcoin network that is completely trust minimized or almost trustless. In the case of running your own full node. And that's just absolutely fascinating that we have a payment system contract that can be completely adjudicated without any third party, without any trusted third party knowing the details. But you do have to broadcast the final state of the contract to the network, and that is then exposing some level of information about what was going on in that channel. Though it does not reveal any past, doesn't reveal any payments that have happened. It just reveals the final state. So you could have had 1,000 payments in the process, and let's say there's a dispute, and the other node publishes, you know, state 998, and you publish state 1,000 because that's actually the last one. Only those two states are ever revealed to the network. However, there is the case of something like a watchtower that we've talked about a little bit in the past, but it's something coming probably pretty soon now to Lightning Network. I can't say for certain which client I think is or implementation is the closest to that. I believe it's L&D, but I could be wrong. I guess I haven't kept up with C-Lightning very well recently, so I'm not 100% sure what they're up to. But when watchtowers come out, they'll be kind of a similar situation, except that they will actually be an intermediary used to enforce a contract in the absence of one of the contract parties. But it does, until something like the L2 protocol, which is an improvement to Lightning, WTs will have a lot, WTs, oh my God, watch towers will have a lot more, will basically be privy to more information within the channel than there would be during a situation like the L2 protocol. That will give back a little bit more of the privacy in regards to when there is no dispute happening. But that's kind of why I think the watchtower concept, and I've recently done I did like a Twitter poll on it a couple days ago talking about this. And that's why I think the watchtower concept makes a whole lot more sense, not necessarily as a service that's offered on the Lightning Network, even though it would make sense that if you're using like a third-party wallet that they offer up a watchtower service basically for free, you know, like for the user ease of use for like users who are not super technical. But as far as like somebody who, you know, wants to be sovereign and takes their personal privacy and then also their sovereignty serious with all of this financial stuff, it'll be wonderful to see tools built out that make basically the integration and usability of like real like open source like security measures essentially between devices much simpler. And that's in the way of like the Casa browser extension is a really great example. Is that without actually exposing your keys, the macaroons or whatever that are exchanged to the browser, it doesn't actually expose it, and you can still just log in and basically use your Casa node as a or through your web browser. And I think being able to connect to your node with, you know, just a QR code from your phone, to have like when integration between all of these devices is really quick and simple, I think things like watchtowers will just move to your other trusted devices. Because everybody, almost everybody today, has multiple devices. And that's almost even becoming a reality in literally poorer nations, which is just insane to think about. That like right now, cell phones are so widespread, and now smartphones are so low cost that they're spreading. Looking at the data on the continued adoption of smartphones is just absolutely ridiculous, particularly in the poorest areas. I think there's a smartphone now for like $15, $20 or something, which is just insane. Regardless, like the majority of like internet users have multiple devices. I mean, I know I have tons and tons of devices. I have, you know, a desktop. I have multiple desktop computers, one strictly for just nodes and running a Lightning node and running a Bitcoin node. And then I have multiple mobile devices. I got my tablet, which I don't actually use anymore. It's getting old these days. I will probably replace at some point with something fresher. But I've got a mobile phone. My wife has a laptop. She's got a phone. There's so many different devices I could use as watchtowers, essentially, and just have tons and tons of different fail-safes just on your own devices. Because, you know, my desktop, like, let's say my router goes out, like, my desktop might not be able to talk to the internet, and I'll be like, oh, crap, you know, like, what do I do with my latest state and all, et cetera? Like, now I got to reboot my router, and now I'm offline. Who knows what's going to happen? Well, if my smartphone is a watchtower for my desktop, well, it's got cell signal, so it doesn't matter that my router went out. I still have internet, and I can still watch the network. And, you know, thanks to something like Neutrino, that's not difficult to do on my phone. It's no longer hugely, like, computational or data-intensive. Again, Neutrino is not quite out yet. I know that one is very, very close. I've seen I've been kind of watching closely work on that, because I don't think we're very far. I think we're just a couple of weeks from seeing mainnet Neutrino, and I'm very excited about that one. Did we hit an episode about that? If you're a new listener, we've hit Neutrino a couple of times. I think we read one from the Lightning Labs blog about Neutrino. go back and listen to that one. I will drop the link in the show notes and in the description of this episode and then in the show notes on the website. So if you want to go back and learn about some of these other things, maybe I'll try to hit one on L2 because I know I'm dropping a lot of things here if you haven't been listening to the show for a while that you may not be aware of. So we got Neutrino, we got Watchtowers, we've got L2, bunch of different stuff. But it's just really cool to see ideas that were thrown around in 1997 by Nick Szabo actually be real today. And like all of his analysis still applies. Like he saw the cypherpunks were looking this far forward. They knew what needed to be built. They just, all the pieces weren't quite there. And Bitcoin suddenly makes all of this possible. Bitcoin suddenly gives a foundation of bearer certificate adjudication of just like a distributed ownership model and proof of a proof of ownership like consensus mechanism where everybody has the exact same ledger about who owns what, and we can just build anything on top of this. Just reading this, like if your brain is spinning as fast as mine, or like while you're hitting all these pieces, you just got to see how like every contract that we do can be made more secure, more private, and involve far fewer parties in order to actually securely go through the entire performance of this contract, of these contracts. And there's just so much potential here. I mean, so many, he talks about like just normal online interaction and how many contracts we have that are all reactive, that they're all just based on going back and fixing them after something goes wrong or after an agreement, and that there are so few, reputation being the dominant one, there are so few proactive measures to establish security before getting into the contract, because there's been no foundation in the digital world. It's just been a case of enforcement, which is so costly. It's so human intensive. Like the amount of labor and time it takes, just the sheer cost of reactively responding to failures of like a computer system or malware or people backing out or bots coming into agreements and not being able to fulfill, so on and so forth. Like the number of different interactions and contracts that we do on a usual, just on a standard basis, the cost is just astronomical to it, when you have no proactive, when you have no setup way of securing the contract and the performance and exactly piece by piece what is going to happen in that contract. And now we do. Now we have this foundation that we can start building on. And we already have something like the Lightning Network that gives us an insurance clause, that gives us in case of attack, do this. It's got like, you know, what is it, 3 branches of the contract that you can execute depending on whether or not things are like you're closing the contract without the other party present, whether or not you are closing the contract mutually and both parties are right there and ready to go, and or there is a dispute and the two parties have a different version of the contract to close. And all of those 3 different scenarios can be dealt with without any third party. There's no reason to bring in an adjudicator, call a judge, like start a lawsuit, like get your lawyer involved, none of that. It's already built into the performance of the contract because we have this amazing tool called Bitcoin to build it all off of, and it's completely trustless. And it's just absolutely fascinating to see how this will start to evolve, because you begin to see all these pieces that will just create this just massive network and internet of contractual agreements. And it just doesn't make any sense with the cost difference. It doesn't make any sense to not utilize it. And I don't know. It's just one of those things that just gets the ball rolling in my brain and distracts me from doing my remodeling because I'm sitting there staring at a board for 5 minutes and I've just gone on a tangent thinking about Bitcoin for that full 5 minutes. So we will go ahead and close this here. I don't want to lead too much. We got some really fun stuff to cover in the last section of this. Like I said, I hope I'm going to just notch out enough time in the next time I do an episode to get this all out in one single part three. But it will be the longest one. We're a little over halfway, not quite two thirds. So it might be a 40-ish minute read left. We will see how it goes. I'll get to see how good my estimate was when we finally get there. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Do not forget to check out cryptoeconomy.life. That is the website where you will find all of this great stuff and much, much, much more. We have we're hitting 250 episodes very soon, and there might be a slow trickle for the next 2 weeks or so, then I should be kind of back in action and getting opportunities to work on this a lot more. And there's still plenty of episodes that I know I've mentioned, works I've wanted to read that I've mentioned, and then videos that I've wanted to do in the line. So all of that is still coming. I still plan on doing a bunch of this stuff. It's just that right now I'm a little short on time. So don't forget to subscribe so you can stay up to date when I start pumping these out again. And don't miss all the cool new stuff on both the Crypto Economy podcast and cryptoeconomy.life website. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to check out Nick Szabo. I mean, everybody knows you should be following Nick Szabo, but he's just got his body of work is amazing. There's plenty of other stuff. Just go search Szabo on the website. That's Szabo on cryptoeconomy.life. Tons of different works that we've hit now. I'm not even sure how many. He probably deserves his own playlist. And of course, follow him on Twitter and check out the other works at the Nakamoto Institute and or his blog, unenumerated.blogspot.com. You'll find all those links at cryptoeconomy.life on the episode, Formalizing and Securing Relationships in Public Networks. All right, guys. Thank you so much again for listening. Subscribe, share, do all those awesome things, and I will catch you in the next episode of the Crypto Economy Podcast. Take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.